Welcome to the Synthetic Media Podcast. I'm your host, Henrik DeCuyer. Join me for interviews and thoughts on the ever-expanding topic of synthetic media. You can find my book on synthetic media on Amazon. Subscribe to this podcast for free. Follow us on syntheticmediapodcast.com and enjoy today's episode.
My name is Turej Ibrahimi. I have actually three hats. My main job is to be a professor at the Swiss Federal Institute of Technology in Lausanne. And I focus on multimedia signal processing, everything ranging from how images should be efficiently coded all the way to how they have to be secured and how they have to be processed. But I have two other hats. One of my hats is I'm a founder and executive chairman of a company that uses artificial intelligence for what we call computational video, basically use AI to make computers understand better their surroundings. And last but not least, I'm the chairman of the JPEG Standardization Committee, which has brought us the ability to take pictures and share them around the world.
Raj, how are you involved with synthetic media?
Well, my job, as I said, is to work on multimedia contents. And these contents, for a large part until recently, were coming from sensors like cameras that take really the real physical world environment and turn them into digital. But in the last 50 years or so, computers have been helping to synthesize, even sometimes create content that is very photorealistic, but it's not actually coming from the real world and real sensors that are looking at these real worlds. That's where I got involved in synthetic media.
Turej, what are the biggest challenges and successes you've seen with synthetic media?
Probably, if we look at the recent years, the advent of artificial intelligence and its application into all sorts of media content has resulted in things you could even call revolutions. And in terms of synthetic media, artificial intelligence have been really instrumental in the last few years. If I give you an example, in the last 40, 30 years, if you wanted to create synthetic content for, let's say, special effects in a movie, you had to really talk to a specialist who had experience through years and years of training. And also this person had to have access to extremely costly and expensive infrastructure. Artificial intelligence is really turning all these things upside down. Now, a lot of things can be simply delegated to machines that learn and they can do things that we want better than we can do it. Even specialists can do it. And they come at a very low cost because of the economy of scale, because you can get access to open source, and these open source can run on, I would say, even off-shelf computers. Now, in terms of concrete example, maybe deepfake is a very, very good example. Deepfake is a very hot topic nowadays. And we are actually even scratching just the surface. In the last 3-4 years, deepfakes have evolved from something that was just a curiosity and not really very realistic to something that today is very close to being indistinguishable from genuine, authentic content. And as I said, this is really only scratching the surface, because as time goes, in the next few years, it is not impossible to think of almost the majority of content that being consumed by humans being of the synthetic, fully or partially synthetic origin, thanks to this revolution, as opposed to just coming directly from a camera or a sensor that is looking in the real environment. Now, this brings us, of course, a lot of challenges also at the same time. In English, we say seeing is believing. We don't say hearing is believing. We don't say reading is believing. So as humans, we have been wired somehow to believe what we see. Now, if you can synthesize everything by a computer, you can basically create any content you want, even content that people might think is coming from a camera. And this opens the door to a lot of fantastic things, like creating new ways of entertainment, creating new ways of interaction between computers and humans. But at the same time, it can create also, and we are seeing that, a lot of less positive impacts. People can make real persons say or look in a way that they never did. We can invade their integrity. We can also hurt their reputation. And this is probably the biggest challenge that we're facing in the next coming years regarding synthetic media, because synthetic content is going to become more and more realistic, and there will be more and more of it. They will be created by more and more people in a very, very easy way. And then we don't really know what is real and what is fake. And that's a very fundamental question to which we have to answer.
Taraj, what advice would you like to share with people working on synthetic media?
I would say think about the long term rather than short term. When you create synthetic content, there must be ways and metadata especially that you will provide in order for anybody who will have access to that media will know whether this content is synthesized fully or partially. And if it is fully or partially synthesized, then the information is provided about how it was done. When they access the content, what really happened from the data since it was either captured or synthesized all the way to when it is being consumed by them. This doesn't mean necessarily there is anything wrong with having content that is partially or completely synthetic. It's just a question of informing people, and then people decide whether based on the context, this is good or bad for their case or the time and context in which they are.
Taraj, where can we learn more about synthetic media and your work on the subject?
As I said, there is a need now to develop technologies and solution and specialty standards in order to facilitate the information about the nature of synthetic media. Now, you can do that in many, many ways, different ways. The way that these days people are emphasizing on is to use the same computers that create synthetic media to also detect whether there is anything synthetic in the media. It's really creating expert systems that can really, even if there is nothing in terms of metadata available, you can know, and the machine can tell you with some level of probability whether something that is being consumed is synthesized or not, fully or partially. This is referred to synthetic media detection, or in the case of deepfakes, deepfake detection. But as I said, as time goes, the quality and the veracity, the perception of these deepfakes and the synthetic media are becoming more and more difficult to distinguish between something that is genuinely coming from a sensor and something that is completely synthesized by, or partially synthesized by computers. So probably this will be a short-term solution, and sooner or later, not only even experts won't be able to see if they watch a content, a video, an image, or even hear an audio or a speech. They won't be able to really distinguish whether it is synthetic or not, except maybe for the context. Because if somebody says something you don't believe in, that they can say that, of course, that's another way to do that. So we need other solutions. And in midterm and longer term, 3 to 5 years and beyond, we need to really have a standard that from the moment the content is created or captured, will leave a trace in terms of metadata in a secure way embedded into this type of media that will say what happened to it. If you take a picture, it will say, oh, this picture was taken from a camera and this or that type of setup. And then if somebody goes and enhances it because this happens, denoises it because this happens, the information is provided. If somebody goes and changes its contrast because the picture was too dark and needed to be brighter, or the colors were not very good and they had to be corrected, all this information is given. And at some point, and this happens also, one can think about, oh, there was a person on the back, maybe we want to remove that person because the focus of attention and the interest is another person. So you start even changing then semantically the content. All this information should be embedded in a standardized way, in a secure and reliable way, so that, as I said, anybody who will access the content will be able, if they want so, to know what was the journey of the content until they reached them. That is referred to in the jargon of experts as provenance information. And we really need a standard for provenance for all sorts of media, speech, audio, video, even 3D objects, and anything you can think about, even documents. When you take a picture mm-hmm. with your camera, a lot of things happens to that picture. The sensor doesn't actually have all the pixels, so it has to guess some of the missing pixels. Yep. Then there is always noise, so you have to denoise it. By denoising, sometimes you remove information that might be useful.
Yes.
You sometimes resize it because mm-hmm. the sensor is not large enough. Then you have to again guess the missing pixels. Mm-hmm. So there is a lot of things that happens to the content even today when you take pictures. So regardless whether it is completely synthetic or not, you synthesize some of it, some of the pixels in that picture. Adobe very recently actually has been working together with the JPEG committee, but also in the context of something they call C2PA, on bringing technologies to track provenance. And in fact, very recently, Adobe Photoshop has plugins for that, which means that you could, when you bring in and import a picture into the Adobe Photoshop, or if you create really from scratch, because you're an artist, you create a synthetic media through Photoshop, you can actually start putting the metadata that I told you embedded in it. And in fact, they use a number of technologies that either are industry standards according to C2PA, or some of the metadata according to what the JPEG standardization committee is doing. So these are the first steps, and Adobe in the world of imaging, of course, has been always a pioneer. And here also they are showing that they are at the edge of the development in this direction of the provenance. The standards that people are working on are often in the form of some metadata that tells you when what happened, and what happened means which kind of transformation the the content, and in our case, in JPEG, it's images, the image was went through. So you need a language that would really tell you how to express the different type of manipulation you can apply to an image and some associated parameters. So you need, and this standard actually is called JPEG Universal Metadata Box Format, JUMP. And it basically tells you, and in fact, Adobe is using it in Photoshop for that, but they are also using other standards and other technologies, because just this, the metadata is not enough. You have to be able also to secure it, make sure that people don't remove or manipulate the metadata itself. You have to have ways to validate and verify that the metadata is indeed corresponding to the content, and you have not stripped the metadata from one content, put in another content, or vice versa. So there is also a lot of other things around the metadata itself and what its syntax should be that have to be considered. And so some of them are being standardized in JPEG. Some of them are not being standardized in JPEG because this goes beyond the scope and the charter of JPEG. Typically, things that JPEG doesn't standardize, but they are very useful to have are, for instance, if you have a Word file, Microsoft Office or Word formatted, the open version of it, Open Office XML, you should be able to also track and have provenance and trace of which kind of changes happen to it in a secure way. Or for PDF, which is, of course, a standard by ISO now, but it is created, it was created by Adobe, and Adobe has its own variant of it also that they commercialize. So again, you know, these are the type of things that C2PA and Content Authenticity Initiative are looking for to use. Some of the metadata actually that JPEG has developed for the purpose of images and video can be used also for other documents, but it's out of our charter. Other consortia like CAI or C2PA will look how best they can either use them as they are or extend them so that they are more suitable for the new type of data that they are working on. In JPEG, also, we are really looking because we have formats that are three-dimensional, either voxelized or the way they are represented in point clouds and light field. And of course, there also you can create a lot of very realistic synthetic content that would be very useful for augmented reality and mixed reality. And there also JPEG is looking into how also, not only for pictures and images that are two-dimensional, but also for three-dimensional content that is used and consumed in virtual reality and augmented reality. You can also have this kind of information so that if you one day you will be walking around with your augmented reality glasses or contact lenses, and there are some real objects and some virtual objects, if you want so, you can know what is really actually physical in front of you and what is just synthesized and is not there.
Join us next week for a new episode by subscribing to the Synthetic Media Podcast. Check out my book about synthetic media on Amazon. Follow us on syntheticmediapodcast.com. This podcast was produced by Henrik de Gior. Music by Mattia Capelli. If you enjoyed this podcast, please leave us a 5-star review. And thank you for listening.